Constitution River lights up Paris, Richard Hughes makes threats to Ireland, and is the old derby set to return? This is the front page. Yes, welcome to this week's edition of the front page. Tons then to talk about, and doing the talking with me, Lee Mottisette, is my esteemed colleague, Chris Cook. Hello.
Hi, Ellie.
And another esteemed colleague, Liam Head. Hello, Liam, home in Lambourne.
Hi, Lee. All right?
Yeah, good. Well, probably not as good as you, Liam, because we're going to talk about a horse who had a fabulous Sunday, but you had quite a good one too, as we'll find out now. Just talk us over what we're seeing here, Liam.
Yeah, I had the joys of playing a football match at Old Trafford on Sunday, and as a boyhood Manchester United fan, not only did I get to experience that, but as you can see from the video, I managed to grab myself a nice little goal in the Stretford end. So as Sundays go, I don't think I'll have a better one for some time.
Are you in contention for a squad place now?
Well, with the summer transfer window approaching, I'm expecting a call-up for Michael Carrick any day now.
Good man. Well, don't undersell yourself.
You got any kind of Scottish connection at all, Liam? I mean, we're always looking for good players.
Well, my heart lies to Ireland, but given they're not in the World Cup this year, I think I'll have to find a great Scottish aunt somewhere down this family tree.
Check the pedigree. If you've eaten haggis, then I think you might be all right. Well, do you know what? This is a seamless link. Given how some people spoke about Constitution River, you might think he might get a place in a World Cup squad as well. He's that good.
Pretty
good. Well, we thought he was that good, and he sort of lived up to the promise on Sunday in the Prix du Jockey Club. There was a big willy wonty about whether he'd gone at Epsom in the Derby or at Chantilly in the Prix du Jockey Club. They went with the French option in the end. He went as the hot favourite for the French Derby, even though he was drawn 15 or 16. That was a nightmare coffin draw in recent years, but he overcame that partly due to some exceptionally well-executed tactics by Team Ballydoyle. Ryan kept wide Ryan Moore on Constitution River through the first furlong or two, and then gradually he came across to find his two stable companions, Montreal and Hawk Mountain, were in first and second. They stayed 1, 2, and 3 all through the race. Well, not in that order, because up the straight, Constitution River eventually overhauled Hawk Mountain and Montreal to win going away. Chris, before we talk about the horse, again, a remarkable performance by Aidan O'Brien and the team to saddle 1, 2, 3 in a classic and to find a way of overcoming that apparently awful draw.
Extraordinary stuff. I mean, and really a great example of a culture's main weakness being used against it. You know, like the last example I can think of that was as clear and definitive was when I was reading Asterix in Britain, you know, about 40 years ago. And the Romans decide they're only going to attack Britain when the Britons are having a tea break, and they immediately conquer the whole country. And this was like that because, of course, you know, what we know about French jockeys and the style of French racing in middle distances anyway, is they love to take a lead off somebody and then finish strongly. And, you know, there's a lack of stamina in a lot of the pedigrees over there. So maybe the jockeys go out there worrying about, am I going to get home over 10 furlongs? But yeah, they were all just sort of sitting there waiting for something to happen. And about 20 seconds into the race, the Ballydoyle three have taken over at the head of the race and they're all in jail. And they're all in immediate terrible trouble. And, you know, they didn't seem to recognize it. It was nearly pathetic in the sort of last couple of furlongs to see all those French horses, you know, finishing strongly, running on into fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh. Not fourth, actually. That was Donica's horse.
Yeah.
But never actually with a sniff of winning. You know, even some, you know, quite vaunted horses, you know, horses that are going to prove talented as we get on through the season.
Yeah.
But those three Ballydoyle runners took control at the head of affairs, partly because no one else wanted to. And it just goes, it really illustrates the thought that Aidan puts into these races. You know, he's really applied himself to, you know, how are we going to get control of this and make sure that this race suits us and not other people? But it also shows up, I'm afraid, the sort of comparable lack of thought that's gone into it from other people. I mean, if you've gone into that race and your plan is just, we'll take a lead and then, you know, after the turn for home, we'll try and find a lane somewhere. I mean, you barely have a plan at all. And Aidan's earned his right to win, and you haven't.
Yeah, absolutely. Liam, I thought as well what was impressive too from Coolmore and O'Brien as a whole as well was that you look at this horse, and he's not a Coolmore bred horse. He was bought at Arcana for 400,000. So, I mean, you can see there's he's a gorgeous horse. And I imagine it was a gorgeous horse when he went through the ring. But 400,000 in modern terms is not a blockbuster price. He was available for anyone to buy with that sort of pocket, of which there are quite a few in the market these days, and they got him.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of almost a different type of profile horse that, you know, we've seen O'Brien have under his care in the last few years. Like you said, Coolmore have got obviously a lot of influence in the breeding industry. And I mean, they've obviously, like you said, that anyone could have put the hat in the ring to bring Constitution River back. But O'Brien must have clearly seen something that poised him to be the one to make that. Listen, he's done nothing wrong. I mean, he was absolutely brilliant yesterday. And I just think he's got the class and ability to be the very best, you know, one of, if not the very best that the yard has trained for some time. I mean, you just look at the races he's won now and the races that he's been sort of aimed at. It could be a remarkably exciting rest of the year for the horse.
I did worry that he looked to be getting a bit warm before the race.
He did get warm before the race, yeah.
He was mucking about when they were trying to get him in the stalls.
He did, but it didn't stop him.
No. And then he was sort of under the pump before the home turn. There were a couple of points where I was thinking, ooh, that could be trouble.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he came good anyway.
He came
but
good.
You know, even though he started from the wide stall, I was expecting something a little bit flashier at some stage from him.
But interesting, he did, obviously, and Scott Burton highlighted this in his report, he covered quite a bit more ground than the first and second.
Yeah.
Aidan, in the post-race press conference, initially seemed to be suggesting that would be it for a while, that he's had a hard race.
That's
there,
right, yeah.
Maybe bringing them back in the autumn. Well, then he did slightly put
maybe
the
eclipse.
The eclipse, maybe, yeah. I thought the vibes going into the Derby period, if you like, were very much that he was the chosen one among the Ballydore horses, that they thought he was the best horse of their Derby horses. He went to Shanty, he didn't go to Epsom. Had he gone to Epsom, would he have won the Derby, do you think, over an extra, what, furlong and a half?
Yeah, I mean, I would be inclined to bet against him with the evidence of what we'd just seen. But of course, you know, we wouldn't get that evidence if he went straight there. He wouldn't look to me like he's going to be a robust stayer at a mile and a half.
And Ryan Moore has said he'd be equally happy back over a mile.
Sure, but I mean, to some extent, that's preparing the way for a stallion career, isn't it? You know, they do like to say encouraging things about their horses. You know, if that's true, well, then let's see it. Maybe he'll be able to turn up in a mile group one at some stage. So we do some rain at Epsom this week. That would have made it a little bit more difficult for him. It'll be very interesting to see where he turns up next. I don't think we're ever going to see him at a mile and a half now. So the stamina question is probably going to go unanswered. There's every chance his stablemate Benvenuto Cellini is going to win on Saturday. You know, everybody has latched onto him as the sexy one. I was worrying in print last week about, you know, are we going to be presented with these two stablemate stars, sort of middle distance-ish, both of them, and they'll never get to meet in a race course. You know, the way their careers are shaping up, you can see how they would take completely different trajectories from this point onwards.
Yeah, certainly possible. Liam, how good do you think he is?
I think he has to, on the basis of what we seen yesterday. I mean, going into the Prix de Jockey Club, everyone was expecting a brilliant performance, and then there was just some sort of throwing an element of doubt then when we heard the draw and how wide he had to overcome. But I mean, I thought Ryan Moore got the timings to perfection, and he just looks like he. I agree with Chris. I'd be surprised if we did see him at a mile and a half now. I think a mile and a quarter is probably his optimum trip, maybe. And the fact that they could go back to a mile. But, I mean, races like the Coral Eclipse and the Judmont as well, certainly, ones that you'd think that he could be aimed at. I think he was
given champions.
I think he,
he's going to be odds on to be in that, isn't he, the Irish champion?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I think I've seen some quotes. He was cut for the arc as well later in the year. You know, it's a while off. Yeah, things chop and change. But I think a mile and a half, mile and a quarter, sorry, is where his best performances sit for me.
Across the rest of the weekend, Chris, I suppose the big story was Carlisle in many ways. A fantastic track. I completed my full set there about 2 months ago. Loved it. Really lovely place. Great to
see. That was the last track you visited in Britain?
That was my last track I visited in Britain, yeah.
Where you weren't like avoiding it? Or were you saving it up?
No. Wasn't about just one of those things that no reason why I hadn't gone there before, but I'm glad I did go there because it was lovely.
It was a great place. Great place for jump racing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it turned out on Saturday, a really good place for flat racing.
I was really chuffed for them to get their first ever group race. And, you know, in a way that seems like a sort of oversight by the way that, you know, we've scheduled things. Only because, of course, Haydock was unable to race, you know, that they're having difficulties with their track. So they're trying to put that together and sort out their drainage situation. It was a bit of a sort of low-key weekend, all told, in British racing. But a strange winning, you know, up at Carlisle would be, quite a good highlight. And there is the potential for her to go on and win Group Ones as the summer carries on. I think, you know, I've always thought of her as a filly who likes quick ground. I saw she was cut for the arc. You'd have to worry about what way the ground would go by the end of the season.
Yeah.
She's very likeable, very easy to watch, you know. She's nearly white like that. Yeah. She must have a bit of a fan club by now, I would think.
Yeah, she was, and she tanked into the right and all. She looked full of class.
Always going to win.
Another classy horse, Liam, we saw at Sandown on Thursday night, the biggest evening meeting of the year in Britain, Brigadier Gerard Knight at Sandown. There's some good performances across the card, but the headline horse is Ombudsman, who gave weight and a beating to the very impressive returner Gethin in the Brigadier Gerard. What did you make of that performance and in terms of what it might mean for him as the season goes on?
Yeah, the victory doesn't surprise me in the performance because we've seen him do it on so many levels now. He's just a really classy horse and he just seems to just be getting better with age, like a fine wine, really. I mean, every time he turns up, he always gives his best. And I just think we're going to see even better to come this year. Certainly, you know, you look at Royal Ascot round the corner and, you know, there's a lot of excitement now about the potential of it, a clash with Derries. And I just think, you know, over these distances, he's going to be very, very hard to beat because he's got the stamina. He's done it time and time again. And, you know, he's had the run under his belt now. So I think he can just go on to bigger and better things. And like you said, I mean, to beat a horse in Gethin, who's obviously just been acquired by Wathnan, they obviously have seen something in him for the last couple of years now. And I know Owen Burrows is very high, highly thought of him. So I just think Ombudsman showed his class once again and, you know, I'd be excited to see what he does next, really.
Put you on the spot now, ask the same question to both of you. Derees or Ombudsman in the Prince of Wales Stakes? Liam?
Ombudsman for me. I just think we've seen him do it before. I just think that run on Thursday would have put him bang on for this. I just think he's the horse to side with on this occasion.
Okay, Chris?
Derees.
Derees.
The way he's been running, winning.
Yeah. He's got the wild factor.
Starting to get to the stage where any kind of defeat is hard to envisage, to be honest.
Yeah.
I could believe him capable of anything at this point.
Yes.
And it's amazing to sort of look back on that, the Dunlop International last year, and you just ran no race.
But what I think is amazing about that and shows you how good Graffard is that he said even after the race that he was so pleased he went there because the horse learned so much that day. For his mental progress, it was really important. So, I'd be 2-1. So I'd be Derees as well. So I'd be 2-1 Derees. A less positive racing story came at this Stowell last week. The Philip Burns Bam. We're going to talk about that soon. But before we do, also in Ireland, a big story blew up in the last week relating to the veterinary checks carried out on horses before races in Ireland. Richard Hughes ran a filly, America Queen, who was withdrawn on the order of the racecourse vets prior to the Irish 1000 Guineas. They didn't like the way the horse was moving. Richard Hughes said she moved worse than that on her previous start in the Nell Gwynn Stakes at Newmarket. The BHA, who'd allowed the filly to run there, recommend that he came forward with some veterinary evidence to explain that she just has a funny gait. That wasn't enough to satisfy the IHRB vets, who withdrew her. They did allow another filly, Manu Kaur, to run in the race, trained by Danny McLaughlin. But the trainer and her connections complained that the amount of time she had to spend walking up in the sun before the race detracted from a chance, and they also complained about the vets. And that has also been the case with the Irish Racehorse Trainers Association, which went public last week saying it had little confidence in the way those veterinary checks are being carried out. It asked for a review of the procedures, but the IHRB, the regulator of horse racing in Ireland, has said in the last few days, akin to, "We think the system works, we're happy with how we're doing it, no investigation," or no new investigation. Chris, pretty bizarre story.
Extraordinary, and it seemed to come a little bit out of a blue sky. I had no idea that there was this kind of trouble brewing. When you get to the stage that the veterinary checks are compromising a horse's chance, and the classic, you know, that is completely extraordinary, and I would have thought clearly unacceptable. You know, of course these things have to be done, and they have to be done properly. But I'm sure they can be done in less than 40 minutes, you know, in the sort of space of time where it's not going to affect the horse and, you know, in any subsequent race. So if nothing else has gone wrong, you know, that clearly has. From what Richard Hughes was saying, you know, you'd have to feel a huge amount of sympathy for him. I think he went there with a full set of x-rays for this horse.
Yeah.
And he provided, you know, his vet to speak on the phone with the veterinary team at the racecourse and explain, you know, he had full confidence in this filly and this was just the way that she's made to, but she wasn't vulnerable. And still she wasn't allowed to run. And so Hughes was saying, well, what more am I supposed to do? You know, are you saying that she can't run ever? What's the deal? And I don't think he's had an answer to that, which again is a very unsatisfactory situation. You know, we shouldn't be putting experienced, successful trainers in that position where they don't actually know what they have to provide in order to convince someone that their horse is safe to run.
Richard also made the point that had the vets been correct in saying that there was something wrong with this filly, he alleged that there was really no care or interest in the filly thereafter, into how she got home.
Sure. That's right. I think they had some answer to that. You know, in any case, it would be the trainer's responsibility. Yeah. But clearly, there's been a really serious falling out with a really significant and important trainer. You'd like to think that some attempt could be made to build bridges. But, you know, also, you know, from the point of view of the procedure, more widely, you know, to clarify what it is that they need in order to be satisfied a horse can run.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to make that a bar that can be cleared by a reasonable set of connections.
Absolutely. Liam, Rich Hughes has said he'd be minded to think about boycotting and also not running horses in the country because that member, Richard, is Irish. That's his home country. He was brought up near the Curragh racecourse. In a wider sense, this sort of seems to fit the pattern of increasingly racing jurisdictions are taking a much harder line on veterinary checks. We know what's happened in Melbourne in relation to the Melbourne Cup, in America with the Breeders' Cup. There's much more inspection, many more inspections taking place in Britain. But here you have a very unusual situation where the Irish Racing Training, the Irish Trainers Association, the community of Irish trainers, is basically giving a no confidence vote in how the Irish vets are operating their own system.
Yeah, 100%. It kind of throws it into a bit of a doubt at the capabilities of them doing the job, really. I mean, if you're getting questioned by you know, people in your own country about the way that they're running things, then, you know, it might sort of cause people to then think, well, you know, if they're not doing it in the way the trainers are used to doing it, then it'll be harder to sort of run horses in the future. I mean, I know Richard he said, obviously, in an interview in the Racing Post last week, that an experience like this would result in him thinking about whether to run horses in Ireland. I mean, that kind of might have been just a bit of a heat in the moment thing. I mean, he's got a great operation there in Lambourne, and he's going to have, if he's got the right horse to run in Ireland, he probably will. But I think, you know, what he mentioned there was the fact that this similar thing happened at Newmarket there before this run in Ireland. And he provided everything, the evidence he needed to provide, and the horse was okay to run. And it's almost a similar situation here, and the horse wasn't able to run. So it's kind of thinking, well, how can these two different bodies have kind of two different ways of operating when ultimately their job is to ensure the safety of the horses? And if Richard Hughes is, you know, and he's gone out of his way to provide all this evidence, like I said, there was vets on the phone and everything, you understand his frustration at why the horse wasn't able to run, because he's done everything in his power to ensure the horse can run. So, these things shouldn't be more complicated than they should if all the evidence sort of links up. And, you know, it does sort of question the future of what the roles and responsibilities are of the vets in Ireland, really, if this is to come, this is the problems we could have in big races.
Well, I do understand that the vets who are conducting these checks are going to be feeling pressure. You know, the worst thing that could happen from their perspective is they let a horse run, which then sustained an injury, and everyone's pointing at them. So they feel that pressure.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has to be explained to them that, you know, they are allowed to make a reasonable decision based on the evidence presented to them. You know, they don't have to, you know, save us from any horse ever getting injured on a race course. It is perfectly possible to pass a horse which then gets injured at the track. You know, they don't have to carry all of that burden. If they start making decisions on a defensive basis, you know, then horses are going to be ruled out of races who really should be allowed to take part.
Another big decision was taken in Ireland on Thursday, this time by the stewards at Limerick, who disqualified a horse called Marion Avenue from first place in a relatively ordinary 100 midweek handicap hurdle. It turned into anything but an ordinary story, partly because of the people involved. This is not the first time that Charles Burns and his son Philip have been involved in a controversial racing story. This one was controversial because Marion Avenue, a well-backed favourite in the race, was leading into the home straight at Limerick when approaching the second last flight. Philip Burns' mount suddenly veered left approaching the second last flight, impeding a Danny Mullins trained rival who went on to be a fast finishing second, and another horse who was then basically forced through the wing of the fight, or forced out of the contest at that point. Marion Avenue went on to win, but was subsequently disqualified by the Limerick stewards. Danny Mullins and his mount were promoted into first place, and the stewards gave Philip Burns a 21-day suspension and did the unusual thing of accusing or finding him guilty of dangerous riding. Chris, start with you. Watching it, it was almost unbelievable, really, what happened. You know, a year ago, we had Philip Burns defending himself.
Came off the
softest of soft on seats in a race at Wexford, which raised an awful lot of eyebrows.
We should say that, you know, he wasn't found guilty.
He wasn't found guilty, though. And then Davy Russell came very much to his defence as on the senior jockey. He said, no, I understand what he did here. I've not yet seen anyone jumping to the defence of Philip Burns after this one. He claimed the horse cocked his jaw, which is why the horse...
I think you could see the horse started whatever it was, but then there was just an absence of correction from the saddle, and the horse continued to go left with two horses on the outside. You know, and he was nearly at the wing by the time he reached the hurdle. One horse managed to stay in and jump out, and the other horse got forced around the edge. It's quite brave of the stewards to call it dangerous riding. I say brave only because it's so rare. I mean, really? I don't think we've had a verdict of dangerous riding in Britain for 20 years now. Tony Cochrane was the last one, Mitchell.
But surely this
did look like.
Yeah, I accept it as dangerous. Yeah,
it looked appalling, I thought. And you question.
Clearly unacceptable.
Absolutely. And a lot of people questioning, surely this merits more than 21 days.
Well, so then you're blaming the guidelines, because the IHRB guidelines for a first offence of dangerous riding say 21 days or up if there are aggravating circumstances and disqualification of the horse, and you take away the riding fee, which, you know, 150 quid, I don't suppose, is either here nor there for most jockeys. Look, 21 days, I don't know if it really does fit what was done here, but it is what's there. You know, you can't blame the jockey for that. You know, maybe they have to ramp up their suspensions in Ireland for that kind of offence. Although I don't really think we're seeing an epidemic of this kind of thing happening. You know, this would be really a standout incident in terms of what was allowed to occur.
But maybe because it's a standout incident, because it happens so rarely, then because it was so bad, the rules should allow for a bigger...
Well, I mean, I take the point completely. I think it would have been appropriate to have at least 30 days for something like that. And I mean, there's an extent to which you never really get to a satisfactory number because you're so outraged by what you've seen. You would like to think that we could have professional horse races without something like that ever happening. I'm sure he'll be regretting it during his 3 weeks on the sidelines.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Liam, I thought was interesting too was that in the stewards report, Danny Mullins seemingly made clear that his view was that the Philip Burns train, Marin Avenue, had been deliberately taken in that direction towards the second flight. So Danny Mullins clearly not agreeing with the argument that this was an accident that happened. It was an intentional manoeuvre.
Yeah, it was... It's a tricky one because we'll never really know the bottom of it because, you know, you're taking a word from either jockey there. But just going back to the kind of the punishment, the fact that it's been labelled as dangerous riding, you have to almost question the guidelines as to think. I mean, for me personally, 21 days is nowhere near enough punishment for what happened. You know, thankfully no one was hurt in the incident, but it could have easily have been a different story had the horse that had been taken out of the race completely. I mean, he was very close to the rail next to the fence. So, it's a tricky one, really. But I do feel like 21 days is a bit too lenient for a case like this. But I think that says more about the sort of the rules and the laws that what they have over in Ireland more than anything.
In fairness, if anybody had got hurt, I think there was scope under the rules for the punishment to go up, and it probably would have done.
Thankfully, nobody did. A really grim episode there at Limerick. Hopefully, we're going to have better news at Epsom this week. We referenced the Derby earlier on. Friday and Saturday, we've got the Derby Festival at Epsom. And the signs are, the signals are, the sales suggest that we're going to have a different sort of Derby day to last year. You remember that last year's Derby was a pretty depressing occasion in many ways, a desperately low attendance of just over 22,000 people in the paid enclosures, around 4,500 people on the hill, about 40,000 across the 2 days as a whole. And it's really pushed the Jockey Club into action. A raft of changes have been made in relation to the festival and Derby Day this year, including free parking now on the hill. It used to be 30 quid. You now genuinely can watch one of the world's great sporting occasions for free. All under 18s are now let in for free. There's a new Derby Fest enclosure from around the 2-furlong pole up the hill, which will be staged in conjunction with the boxing promoter Frank Warren. We'll have big music acts, Pixie Lott headlining that on the Saturday. There's a community zone on Tatnall Corner. We'll have 20 double-decker buses there, with around 5,000 people expected to support the 20 charities and the 20 double-decker buses. There's bleacher seating, which is the sort of thing you'll see near big golf events near the winning post. Raft of changes, and the suggestions are that the sales are very positive. Jim Allen, the Epsom general manager, had
put forward an ambition to have 60,000 people across the 2 days. That's compared to around 40,000 last year. Looks like that is going to be met. And among the people who will be there on Saturday are the King and Queen. The King hasn't been at Derby Day as monarch yet. That will change this year. And that is significant because there's a royal wedding on Saturday. Peter Phillips, the King's nephew, is being married in Gloucestershire. That meant most people thought there was no chance of the King and Queen being at Epsom, but they will be going from the wedding, it seems, to the Derby, which I think, Chris, can be interpreted as the King and the Queen seeking to offer their support for this attempt to revive the Derby, which I think is very welcome. I think the efforts to revive the Derby are very welcome. And having been pretty depressed leaving Epsom last year, how the day played out, I'm quite excited about Saturday.
Great. I mean, it's a wake-up call, isn't it? I think guys like you and me, you know, because the, you know, sport's in our bones by this stage. And we just assume that, you know, everybody understands what a big deal the Derby is. But, you know, that's not the case. We were in a very sort of competitive environment when you're wanting crowds to come along and support your occasion. So, you know, some serious work has got to be done to make sure that people are going to turn up. And, you know, maybe that wasn't done to a sufficiently high standard. Anyway, you know, it seems that that Jim has got a bit between his teeth, and hopefully that will bear fruit. Progress is progress. You know, we can't sort of, after what happened last year, I don't think you can ask too much except for a bigger number.
Yeah.
If you can start getting things heading in the right direction, then, you know, that's a good thing, and that's to be welcomed. And, you know, hopefully we can expect bigger crowds in the future. It's so important, you know, because, you know, even if you're making things as easy as you possibly can for them and there's free spaces on the hill, as you say, which there always used to be, you know, that still counts. You know, just the presence of a big bunch of people having a great time gives your occasion significance and relevance, and it really lifts the atmosphere. For, you know, for the people who have paid to come and be there. If you're in the stands on an expensive ticket, the very last thing you want on Derby Day is to be looking out at the hill and seeing, you know, five men and a dog out there. You want a sense of buzz and young people, you know, doing stupid things and having a great time. And then the horses running around them. That carnival atmosphere that, again, we just used to take for granted, you know, when we were attaching to sport in the 80s and 90s. You know, let's make sure that the younger generation gets to experience some of that, because that's got to be a part of Derby Day.
I think that's absolutely right. Liam, it's a tricky one for the Jockey Club because historically, they haven't been sure how to play the hill, in the sense that because it's always been free entry, albeit in recent years with a parking charge, they don't really commercially benefit from the hill. The money comes from the grandstand side of the race course. But as Chris points out, the hill is a visual embodiment of the health of the Derby, and a quiet hill reflects very badly on the Derby. Looks like that won't be the case this season. So we had 40,000 across the 2 days roughly last year. They're looking to get 60,000 this year. And by 2030, they're aiming for 100,000. So, you know, they're really setting quite clear metrics in terms of what they want to achieve with this effort to reinvigorate the Derby. It's a bold attempt.
It is, but I think now is the time that they need to kind of put the foot down and say, right, we need to do these things. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of learnings from this weekend because, you know, they've, like you said, they've made a lot of changes going in from this time last year to where we are now. The main thing is getting more people through the door, plain and simple. You get more people through the door, you have a better atmosphere, a better buzz about the place. I mean, this the British Derby, the Derby in England, I mean, when you're looking at sport in Britain, you know, you look at FA Cup final day, you look at, you know, Wimbledon, you know, these sporting events that are around different sports are the kind of the ones that everyone wants to be at. So when it comes to the Derby in racing, obviously in our sport, you know, we have Royal Ascot, we have Cheltenham, we have the Grand National, but Derby Day, you know, it comes at a time of year where, you know, hopefully you get the weather, you know, there's a bit more of a buzz around the place because it's summertime. You know, you get top class racing, you get you know, people through the door. And like you said, the king and queen as well, I think that is a statement statement from them, for their support that they continue to show racing. So I think, yes, we won't know the sort of the full debrief about how successful it is until probably next week when we get the numbers and stuff. But you want to be there on Saturday and Friday as well for the Oaks Day as well. And you want to see the place full, because as well, if you're watching it from afar as well, it looks so much better when you see a packed out place compared to an empty one for such a historic race.
Yeah, very much so. Fingers crossed for Saturday. And Liam, who wins the Derby?
It's a very hot race. I mean, the one that I've sort of been having in the back of my mind at the moment is Maltese Cross for William Haggis. Thought he did a good job at Newbury. Connections weren't massively overpleased by his performance, but he showed a lot of improvements to win at Lingfield next time out. And I think it'd be a great story for Connections and for the owner, George Ward, as well. So, yeah, for him, for me, just presents a bit of value.
Okay, Chris, I think the favourite, Benvenuto Cellini, is probably much the likeliest winner, but I've had two each-way plays on Bay and Brilliance, who was just behind Maltese Cross at Lingfield, and Action, who was well-beaten in the Dante, but I just think if he gets like a Lambourne-type ride from towards the front, he could get rolling and go run a big race. What about you?
I was just thinking about Action. I think would he be the second horse ever to be beaten in the Dante and win the Derby?
Oh, the first seeing?
Workforce. Ancient Egypt, I got, you know, each way price. So I think he might have been 25s at the time. He's still 16s and I think still quite backable at that. He's still sailing below the radar. Yeah. Quite taken with the way he won at Newmarket.
It was good.
I think Connections were chuffed to sort of get that out of the way, and then they can sit back and watch the other Derby trials and see some people falling by the wayside. You can see him staying, and there might not be too much of that going on in this race. He's been running on quick ground, but I think he'd be fine, you know, on good or maybe even a little bit softer. And with the amount of rain that's potentially coming in the next 24 hours, you know, that might make a difference. I don't know if it'd necessarily be good news for the favourite if the word soft crept into the ground description. But we know what Epsom's like, probably the last 2 days, you know, it'll just dry out anyway.
I live down the road. I've been watering my rhubarb and hydrangea pretty much every day. So we have been parched. Yes. And the rhubarb is not looking healthy. So
sorry to hear that.
That's all right. Fingers crossed on the garden.
Hope it pulls through.
You're very kind. Liam, we've also got Royal Ascot just around the corner. Geez, what a great time to be alive this is. We have a whole week after Epsom, and then Royal Ascot comes along. That's knocking on its door now. You're not a million miles down the road from Ascot in Lambourne at the minute. What's getting your juices bubbling around the Royal Meeting?
I think my suit fitting for my morning suit is next weekly. My first time.
Are we confident on this?
It'd be my first time. Well, yeah, I mean, it's my first time at Royal Ascot. So I'm there 3 days next week for the Royal Meeting. I've been to Ascot many a time for, you know, covering different race days and stuff. So listen, I think it comes at a time of year when the mood around the country seems to be a bit more upbeat with the summer holidays sort of looming large, and I just think I think we've had such a brilliant start to the flat season this year. You know, we've seen some really high class horses, and we've seen so many different winners. Yes, Aidan O'Brien's got a battalion squad. You know, we're expecting him to, the form he's been in, you're expecting him to win, you know, 5, 6, 7 different races across the meeting. But you know, you've got a lot of different horses winning, you know, just different trainers and stuff. And I think it's going to be an exciting meeting. You know, you touched on Budsman and Darius there in the Prince of Wales. You've also got Alma Cam, who's going to go for that race, won the Tats Gold Cup for Red Walker as well. So, you know, certainly in Lambourne, there's a lot to look forward to for the meeting. And I think it'll be another successful one.
Yeah, can't wait. Chris, I'm really excited about seeing Jolly Star on this Saturday in the sprint. I'm a huge fan of Chris Waller, right back to the Winks days, and I think she could be an Aussie winner. What about you? What are you excited about at the moment?
Well, the whole meeting is great. I love Royal Ascot, and part of the reason for that is, you know, we've had our collie wobbles in recent years with the Cheltenham Festival. You know, as the level of competition dribbling away a little bit. Whereas Royal Ascot, in my memories, it's been exactly the same for about 40 years that I've been following it. You know, it's just it's an amazing range of really fascinating races. And, you know, everyone is an interesting puzzle with great and enjoyable horses. The mile three-year-old races that go around a bend are always a source of, you know, huge entertainment for me. You see very fast and classy horses sometimes. You know, there's going to be some trouble in running for somebody. Because of that, you know, aspect of the bet, they go from the Guineas to going around the bend there. We've got Gestad taking on Bo Echo, maybe in the St. James's Palace Stakes, if we're all lucky. That would be a hell of a race. And then maybe Precise in the Coronation Stakes on Friday. She's got stablemates in there as well. Maybe there'll be something from France that'll come over and challenge her. Those would be the two races I enjoy the most, whatever happens.
And the Gold Cup looks pretty deep this year with Scandinavia, Rahib. We haven't got Trawler. Well, we don't think we're going to have Trawler, but it still looks like a really interesting race.
Yeah.
You'd
think for a jumps fan, I'd be into the Gold Cup, wouldn't you? But I mean, when you get into the mood of flat racing, the Gold Cup is just a chance to make a cup of tea, isn't it, for the first half of it, and well, then it's like, you know, the pace picks up in the final half mile, and then it gets interesting. I'm sorry, this is sacrilege, isn't it? I can't believe saying mean things about the Gold Cup.
You're going to get more pleasure from trying to sort out the 28 runners in the Queen Mary, aren't you?
I don't know about that, but I mean, I did read that Wesley Ward was bringing a dozen horses. That's always a great part of those straight course two-year-old races is trying to figure out where the American horses fit in.
And he's not been quite the fact, has he, in recent years, Wesley?
Didn't have a runner last year, I think. So I think an awful lot of it with him depends on the weather. You know, like if you get a drop of rain in the previous five days, then he's in trouble. But, you know, if you get glorious summer weather, then he'll have a double, I would think.
A double?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I know which ones, but...
They're
just so fast. They come winging at the stall, and then it's just a case of can they get to the line before they run out of puff. And because it's Ascot and it's a stiff track, that makes things difficult. And there's always that edge of danger. If you ran some of those races at Epsom, they'd win five lengths every time.
Oh, I'd love that idea of the Queen Mary down the hill at Epsom. Anyway, we've talked a lot about a lot of things in this week's show, which is what we did. We'll do it all again next week. But until then, thank you to Chris. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to our Old Trafford star, Liam Head. Thank you, Liam.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you to watching. And when we're back next week, we'll know who has won the Derby and the Oaks. Enjoy the B week at Epsom. Bye-bye.